I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, roamingoz.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, then we start off in Yeovil.
Yes, and you're going to be chatting to Alf Cantrell.
And he is in charge of the Banjo Paterson Museum.
Yes, a very good museum that
and,
is.
And he also runs that fabulous campground there as well.
Yes, he manages does. That.
And the Banjo Paterson Cafe. What a yes. place to get a burger.
Yep.
And straight after that, I'm going to be chatting with Jeff Diaf, and he's going to be talking to us all about fifth wheelers.
That'll be interesting.
Very interesting, because I'm noticing there's more and more fifth wheelers on the road, because we've got one now. We're starting to notice them, aren't we?
We are.
And then straight after the chat with Jeff about fifth wheelers, I had a chat with a lady, an English lady. Her name was Carol. Now, where did we meet Carol?
We met her at the Longford Caravan Park in Tasmania.
And she's travelling in a fifth wheeler solo.
Yes.
With an Iveco truck.
Good luck to her.
Good luck to her. Now, she was so much fun to chat with. She asked me for a Tina Arena song, and I decided to give her a double shot of Tina.
Oh, okay.
So apart from all these fabulous chats, Lynn...
We've also got a great selection of music.
As requested by the people we interview. So, Lynn, what do you think? On with the show. The listeners, Phil C here, and I'm in Yeovil. And we are at the Banjo Paterson Museum with Alf Cantrell. Now, Alf is the curator of the museum. How are you, Alf?
Going extremely well, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us today, my friend.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. It is. It's a pleasure for us to be here. Now, we were here about two, three years ago, and I spent about 4 hours in this wonderful museum. Tell us all about the museum for the listeners that haven't been to Yeovil before.
The Banjo Paterson Museum is located in Yeovil because this is where Banjo Paterson spent his childhood in Yeovil, which in those days was called Buckenbach.
Okay.
And every town needs something, small village or town, to attract people to come to it so they don't die, to keep the cash flow going through the main street.
Okay.
We only have about four shops in the main street. And we have a lot of through traffic. But pull them up and slow them down, what can we do? So we opened a museum for Banjo Paterson.
Okay. So what would the population of Yeovil be? Because it is a small town, you said.
About 260.
Okay. And so how long have you been the curator?
Since it opened, that's 7 years.
Okay. Rightio. And all the exhibits in here, did you put these together? Were a lot of things donated by local people?
Quite a few things were donated, not necessarily by locals, but the majority of them I either had or we have purchased since we opened.
Okay. Now, I understand, because we were here about 2 or 3 years ago, you got a brand new bronze statue out the front, is that correct?
Yes,
Banjo Paterson?
We do have a new bronze statue. It was unveiled only 2 weeks ago.
Okay, 2 weeks ago. Incredible. Now, what about this hat across the road? Because the day I pulled up, it was raining, and I saw this fellow, which I thought was a fellow sitting in a wheelchair in the rain. It's actually meant to be Banjo sitting there with a pipe in his mouth.
It's the swagman.
Okay, all right.
It's the swagman, Andy. Andy sang as he watched Andy waited till his billy bull. It's
Andy. Ah, okay.
And he's under the big Cobra Banjo Paterson hat.
He is indeed. I saw the hat as we were driving to the museum, and it was raining slightly, and from a distance I actually thought it was a real person in the wheelchair getting wet.
He doesn't talk a lot.
No.
Gosh, he's a good listener.
He's a hell of a good listener. I agree with that. So for people who come to the museum, I was here, as I said, a couple of years ago, and I spent at least 3 or 4 hours in there. What do you think the minimum time would be?
Minimum time would probably be an hour.
Okay.
The people spend in there. Some people come back tomorrow and spend more time in there, those that are more deeply interested in Banjo Paterson.
Yeah.
The majority of people are amazed at the fact that he did so many things in his lifetime. He's known as the author of Waltzing Matilda and the author of The Man from Snowy River and Clancy the Overflow. And to most people, that's the end of the Banjo Paterson story. But of course, he did so many things in his lifetime, from being a winning jockey in Sydney to working with horse-drawn ambulances on the Western Front during the First World War to being the assistant vet as he took the horses across, 7,000 horses to Egypt for the Allied forces, to being a Boer War war correspondent, to being a solicitor in Sydney for many, many years, captain of the Australian, the New South Wales polo team, and captain of the New South Wales tennis team.
Wow, I didn't know that. I knew a lot of it, and I'm a bit of a banjo tragic myself. That was what brought us here, so I didn't realise that. Tennis as well.
Tennis, and he played a mean game of cricket as well, and golf.
Okay, all right, there you go. Well, we've obviously come to the right place to find out about Banjo Paterson, that's for sure, Alf. Now, tell us a little bit about the park that's directly opposite, because you've got several sculptors across there.
Yeah, when we started to promote Banjo Paterson in Yeovil, we ran a festival every year called the Mulga Bill Festival.
Yes.
And the Mulga Bill Festival ran once a year and attracted up to about 7,000 people.
Okay.
It was a long weekend, probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes.
And but the problem was it was only once a year.
Okay.
And that was when we decided we needed something to attract people every day of the year.
Yep.
So we started off cleaning up that park opposite, which was absolutely a tip when we started. It belongs to the Lands Department.
Right.
And we mowed it, we cleaned it up, and we got several grants to level it, move the rocks about and do everything there. And then every time we did something in town that raised money to improve our community, which was what the festival did, build toilets, etc., plant trees, we always left something, and we left a sculpture.
Okay.
And we had that sculpture specially made for, you know, the new year, 2014, 2015,
2016, etc. And so on, All righty. Now, you've obviously been living in Yeovil for a little while to be the curator of the museum. Were you born here?
I'm not a local.
You're not a local?
No, I've only been here for about 36 years, 37 years. And the locals don't consider that to be a local.
So 37 years. How do you become a local in Yeovil?
Well, I've always said you either have to be born here or marry your cousin.
Okay, marry your cousin. So what do the locals think about an answer like that?
Well, they're not very happy about it, but it is so true in Yeovil.
It's very humorous, Alf. You've got a great sense of humour, my friend. Now, one other thing, apart from it being a museum and an extremely interesting one, listeners, as I said, I was here a few years ago and spent 3 or 4 hours here and would have spent longer, but we just had to keep moving along. You've also got this great cafe called Clancy's. Tell us a little bit about the cafe.
Well, the cafe here, Clancy's Cafe, is purposely built in the front of the museum as part of it.
Right.
And people come, as you said, and they spend a bit of time and they might sit down and have a cup of coffee, then go back into the museum. And it's the cafe that generates the monies that pay the day-to-days on the museum, because you've charged people $3 or $5 to go into the museum. That doesn't pay for your electricity and your rates and your water, etc., etc.
Okay.
So that's the purpose of that, and we keep everything very much to a minimum. You can buy a beautiful hamburger here for $5.
Which is, and we've just had a beautiful cappuccino and some lovely scones. And great quality of food, very, very affordable for the travel.
And that Devonshire tea would have cost $6.
Okay.
So
beautiful.
Good value.
Good value for money. And you've also got a great camping area down here, which is absolutely fantastic value for money. Tell us a little bit about that.
The camping area is run by the Show Society.
Right.
And it's a means of generating money for the Show Society. We were fortunate enough some years ago to get a grant to build the facilities down there, which are better than home.
Right.
And then people can come and they can stay for 1 day or 2 days or 5 days, whatever they like, and use it as their centre for travelling around, or just to spend an evening in Yeovil.
Yep.
And it's on the showground. It has power, very good toilets and showers, and is an ideal place for anyone to stay.
And How much is that now?
It's only $15 a night.
$15 a night.
Regardless of how many you have.
Okay. As long as you don't bring 12 kids and 18 dogs.
Well, we'll put a stop at the dogs to start with.
Okay, fair enough.
We don't mind people bringing dogs, but there is something on our website, I think, that says 3 days maximum.
Yep.
And that's to cover ourselves to people who bring 18 dogs and 3 motor cars and just make a nuisance to themselves.
And make a nuisance and decide they want to move in at $15 a night. Showers, hot water, great facilities. Tell us, lastly, that's this festival that you mentioned before, is that still running or no?
No, it's not. No.
It's been finished up.
It has finished up and we are now running this.
Yes.
And we are the Rotary Club in Orange started then running a festival called the Banjo Patterson Australian Poets Festival.
Ah, okay.
And it's run in February every year.
Okay.
Of course, we are one of the people that voluntarily help to run it.
And yes.
We put on a function here every year.
Right.
During that festival. And we have a poetry day and a what we call a Banjo Patterson's brunch.
Okay.
We put on here every year in February.
Mm-hmm.
But the Orange, being a much larger centre than us, are able to do more.
Okay.
And they run a very big children's program for teaching and educating children on poetry every year with guest poets.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time, Alf. It's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you. Yes, I'm going to ask you now, because we're just about to wind this one up, I've got to play you a song. Now, do you have a favourite Australian singer?
I certainly do.
Okay.
Are there more than one?
Oh, well, it depends who you ask. It depends. You definitely don't look like an AC/DC sort of a man, so... Who would be your favourite, Alf?
There is only one Australian singer, in my opinion, that produces absolutely magnificent music and magnificent lyrics, and that is Slim Dusty.
Slim Dusty, definitely one of the greats, that's for sure. So what about a favourite Slim song?
Walk a Country Mile.
Walk a Country Mile. Thank you so much, Alf, for taking the time to talk to us. It's been a pleasure for us to be here and for you to take some time with us. Absolutely great. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for coming to Yeovil. It's been a pleasure having you.
All right. There you go, listeners. The town is called Yeovil. It's the Banjo Patterson Museum. Make sure you come and talk to Alf and Alf Cantrell. Now, it's only about an hour to Dubbo or Parks from here, so even if you don't want to stay in Yeovil, it's not that far to come just for a day trip.
An hour also to Orange.
Yes.
So it's really in the centre.
Okay.
And it is... by far the nicest facilities in all of those areas.
Well, there you go, folks. You got it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Alf Cantrell, Banjo Patterson Museum. We're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after that song, Walk a Country Mile.
Well, I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Now a country mile would be the longest distance a man could ever travel when he's down. And you curse the never-ending road before you when you think you'll never make it into town. But you meet a friend or two along the highway, and you learn a lot you never knew before. And if the journey takes a lifetime when you thought a year or two, well, you just don't give up easy anymore. And I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Walking that long mile has shown me changes, changes in the people and the land. But I'll bet the road to Marble Bar's no better than when I drove with trucks and caravans. And country bloke is still the same old peddler. No matter what the place he's working in. And although I've covered many miles, I still can't wait to see what the next long country mile will bring. Well, I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Yes, I knew I'd have to walk that country mile.
Seventh Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. This is Roman Oz, and we're at that segment again, and we're speaking again with Mr. Jeff Diath from Checkweight. Now, what's the topic for this week, Jeff? We didn't mention anything last week. What have we got up your sleeve today?
Well, Phil, when we were talking off air after last week, you mentioned that you've seen a few fifth wheelers on the road for travels.
Yes, indeed.
So I thought we'd just touch on fifth wheelers and how they're different to caravans.
Fantastic. Fantastic, mate. You know what? You must have been reading my mind, because I was going to ask you if we could bring it into the program at some stage after our little discussion last week. And great stuff. Great stuff, because there are more and more of these vehicles appearing on the road. So tell us as much as you can about fifth wheelers. Do you weigh them, firstly?
Look, Phil, I haven't weighed very many. I think I've weighed three.
Okay.
When I've weighed over 500 caravan and vehicle combinations, three is a pretty small number.
Yep.
So I'm not going to profess to be an expert on fifth wheelers, and there's definitely pluses and minuses for fifth wheelers.
Yep.
But the few that I have weighed were a bit interesting from that point of view.
Okay. Interesting in what sense? Because I'm always, I mean, if we're talking a truck, are we talking, when you say fifth wheelers, because I've seen different combinations of fifth wheelers. I've seen people with a truck, and I've seen probably more with a ute style vehicle that's still got that same hitch on it. So you're talking interesting as in people that are trying to drag a fifth wheeler with a ute or a truck. What do you mean?
Look, I just think it was what happened was that you can't call it a tow ball weight, but it's the hitch weight.
Yes.
Was a lot higher than they anticipated.
Okay.
And if you if you're not aware of what a fifth wheeler is, it's more like a semi trailer setup.
It is. Yes.
excuse me. But it does give you some inherent better stability than towing the a caravan.
Yep.
You've got the weight, instead of the weight of the tow ball impacting on the tow bar behind the axle of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The hitch is over or just in front of the rear axle of the vehicle.
Right.
So we don't have that multiplication, that 1.5 times that I've referred to before.
Okay.
You know, if you've got a tow ball weight of 300, you're putting 450 on the rear axle.
Yes.
However, what I found was those two or three that I've weighed, that the hitch weight was way, way heavier than what the clients anticipated it being. In actual fact, one of them was about 650 kilos.
Wow.
He was towing it with a Ford F-250, I think it was.
Okay.
And to get the weight of the hitch, because, you can't just use a tow ball weigher because it's so high, we weighed the vehicle unhitched and weighed the vehicle hitched. So that gives us our actual weight.
Okay. So
Does that make sense? It does.
I'm a little confused though, because you know you always sort of estimate that your ball weight, if we're speaking of a caravan, is around about 10% of what the caravan weighs, don't you? So if you've got a 3-ton caravan, you know, the rule of thumb is your tow ball is going to be somewhere around 300. Is that correct? Which puts 450 onto your rear axle.
Yep.
So if you've got a fifth wheeler that has, you know, a GVM of 3,500, why would you have, say, was that a really heavy rig that guy was pulling with 600 or?
Yeah. Well, all of fifth wheelers tend to be heavy. There's no small fifth wheelers that I've seen.
Okay.
they're all pretty up there in, you know, the 3-ton, 3.5-ton.
Okay. But if you've got a 3.5-ton caravan, for example, or a fifth wheeler, I keep saying caravan, fifth wheeler, would it be fair to say that a guesstimate would be 350 on that hitch point on the back of the truck, or no?
I think that's probably what people do estimate, but in the couple that I've done, it's much heavier.
And I guess this is the confusing part, because if you get a fifth wheeler that's 4-ton, you still shouldn't end up with 600 on the hitch point, should you? Was it the way he had it loaded? What was the actual reason for that?
Well, if you look at it, you know, the profile of a fifth wheeler, the wheels are well set back.
They are.
Then all your storage is in the front.
Okay. So, yes.
Yeah. So it's naturally going to be heavy at the front.
Okay.
And when you, the same thing as you look at a compliance plate and might say, you know, 300 hitch or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All your storage is in the front, under the bed, you know, in the box, under the bed, things like that.
Yes.
So, again, you need to be pretty aware of how much weight you're putting where and what effect is that is having on the vehicle. Because if your hitch is 600, then it's no real difference from a tow ball weight, although it will be inherently more stable than what a caravan would be.
More stable. Yeah. But at the end of the day, if he was using an F250, was he in trouble? Was it like he's overweight, or what was the end result to that chap? Because, I mean, an F250, that's a big rig in itself.
Yeah, the problem with F250s, it's another probably podcast, but or interview, is that, you know, they don't have a big payload because they're downgraded so that you don't need a light rigid license.
Okay.
But the benefit, I suppose, is that you don't then have a whole heap of gear loaded into the tray of the vehicle.
Okay.
So you're not adding all that weight as well to the rear axle.
Mm-hmm.
Because with a fifth wheeler, you've got that hitch arrangement, so you don't get to use the tray as storage.
Okay, so the tray of the, and an F250's got a mighty big tray.
Yeah.
And you're saying that pretty much all that space is unusable because of the weight of the hitch on the F250.
It's the space you need. You can't put a whole.
You can't put a whole leap in it, no, because you need that turning area, don't you?
Yeah. So that's one of the disadvantages of a fifth wheeler. But inherently, they are more stable. And when you talk to people who tow with a fifth wheeler, they love them.
Okay.
Because they are more stable, but you've got more storage in the caravan. So you've got to be aware of your weight limits in the caravan, because that's where you're putting everything, because you don't have available in the vehicle.
And the thing with the fifth wheelers too is that they are really a house on wheels. And I mean, their water tanks, their water holding capacity is much greater than a caravan. And you've got this massive black tank for your black water that you don't have in a caravan. You've only got those tiny little cassettes for the, you know, for the toilet. Whereas most fifth wheelers have probably got 100 litres of holding capacity for the black tank, wouldn't they?
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure. But, yeah, I mean, they're all different, but they're a much bigger rig and designed for a different purpose, really.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. But they are becoming more and more popular. I did see a guy towing a fifth wheeler, and I'm not sure if we've mentioned this earlier in any of our chats, but the guy was actually towing it with an old fire engine, And it was he was parked in a showground. I'm trying to think where it was. And he had an old fire engine. So he had, and he was carrying 2,000 litres of water in the fire engine. And he had this massive black tank on the back of the old fire engine that he used to pump his black out, because obviously if he was staying somewhere for a prolonged period, he would pump it off the car, off the fifth wheeler into the tank on the back of the fire engine, and then drive the fire engine to the dump point. So it was a huge, a massive setup. I've never seen anything like it in my life. But he said he bought that thing. He was an ex-truck driver, and he said, look, it's great that these people have all this towing capacity, but the one thing that 90% of people don't even bother to take into consideration is their stopping capacity. You know, you'll get somebody with a 3.5-ton caravan and they're pulling it behind your, you know, your Land Cruiser with absolute, and it pulls it with like with no effort, you know. They're great to tow. But then the old truck driver fellow with the fire engine said, yeah, fabulous, but then you've got to try and stop the blasted thing in an emergency situation.
Yeah.
And this is where these things do come unstuck, you know what I mean? So he said, I never have an effort stopping any of this with a fire engine. So, yeah, bit extreme, but at least he knew he was going to travel in comfort, not have any effort, no issue, no nothing out there, you know what I mean? So
it probably had a fair bit of water tank capacity on the fire engine as well.
Well, he did. He had 2,000 litres. That's what I said. He had these two tanks that just came with the old X fire engine, and that was 2,000 litres of water. So he's never going to run out of water, that's for sure. Okay, so anything else about the fifth wheeler, Jeff, that you want to mention? Because we've never discussed fifth wheelers before, and I think they are an important vehicle to mention, because there are more and more people now travelling on the road, living on the road, which is why I'm seeing more fifth wheelers, because they are so comfortable. You can live in these things. You've got a slide out, and it is. It's like a small house on wheels.
Absolutely, and I think, they are, from what I've been told, inherently more stable.
Okay.
And you have more room.
Yes.
Just, be aware that what is on the compliance plate about the hitch weight will be dramatically increased. So go back to, thinking about where you're going to store things and how that's going to affect the weight.
Uh-huh.
Like any normal caravan, be aware of what you pack.
That's the most important thing, isn't it? And I suppose people thinking, hey, I've got a fifth wheeler, I've got an F-250, I can put 10 tons of rubbish in here that I'm never going to use, but not the case.
No, and I think, I wrote a blog about Rams, I really think the only way a Ram 1500 can comfortably tow 4.5 tons is if it's in a fifth wheel situation.
Okay.
Because if you watch, there's a TV program called Heartland that is all about horses in Canada.
Yes.
And we were watching that when I first started this weighing gig. And every single F-250 or Ram 1500 is towing horses. Yep. It's all fifth wheels in Canada.
Okay.
So it's very, very few were towing normal horse floats.
Okay.
And they were having, 3 or 4 horses in these big horse floats.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at towing with a fifth wheeler, make sure that you get the vehicle that's appropriate for it as well.
Okay, fabulous. All right, there you go, listeners. Fifth wheelers, make sure you get the appropriate vehicle. Don't just go out and buy yourself a BT50 and get one of those things modified, because you might find yourself in all worlds of trouble. How can we end this segment today, Jeff?
How about we have a song?
Absolutely. We always have a song. They've got to be Aussie. You know the drill now. This is you've been on here now for almost 20 shows, I think.
Well, I'll be getting pretty good at it by now.
Oh, absolutely. So what's your favourite song for today for the fifth wheeler?
Well, because we were talking about fifth wheelers and a lot of fifth wheelers, horse floats.
Yes.
I thought we'd have The Horses by Darryl Braithwaite.
Ah, fabulous choice. The horses. How appropriate. Fifth wheelers pulling horse floats. There you go, listeners. Jeff, thank you so much for your time today, mate. And any idea what we're going to discuss next week?
Oh, look, we just touched on trucks and motorhomes and things like that. But why don't we talk about motorhome weights?
Motorhome weights. Fabulous. There you go, listeners. If you're travelling in a motorhome, we'll be discussing that on next week's program. Jeff, thank you so much for today. And you stay safe, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Phil. Travel safe and enjoy.
There you go, listeners. Stick around for Darryl Braithwaite's The Horses, and we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that. G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roaming Oz, and I am chatting with a lovely English lady who goes by the name of Carol, who's travelling alone with a fifth wheeler. How are you today, Carol?
I'm good, thanks.
Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I was absolutely jaw smacked when I saw you bring this huge rig into the caravan park, because we're actually at Longford, and you've got this very large unit. It's an Iveco flatbed truck, a dual cab, and which is a 6-speed manual. First of all, tell us about the truck. How do you like driving it?
I wish it was automatic.
Okay.
But no, it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
You don't mind driving a manual?
It hurts my knees sometimes, but yeah.
Okay. And you've got a fifth wheeler in tow.
Yes.
So all up, you're around about 14 metres long.
Yes.
And the fifth wheeler weighs just under 4.5 tonne. And your truck's just under 4.5 tonne, so you can do all this on a car driver's license.
Yes.
Before you got this fifth wheeler, did you have any experience driving anything as large?
No.
Not at all.
No, I just had caravans.
Okay, so you started out with caravans.
Yep.
Okay, what made you choose a fifth wheeler?
I've always wanted one, and a friend turned up at one of the parks and he had one, and I said, oh, I've always wanted one. And he said, go for it. He said, they're easier to drive, they're safer. Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes, definitely.
You used to have a caravan before.
Yep.
So you think this is easier to drive?
Yes.
Okay, this is interesting. Because it weighs, like, it's almost 9 tonne.
Yep.
Whereas your car and your caravan would probably be... What sort of car and caravan did you have?
I had a Nissan Pathfinder and a Jayco Sterling.
Okay.
Van.
So a much smaller unit.
Mm.
So why did you want a fifth wheeler? I mean, they're like a house on wheels. I can understand why you want all this space and I guess it's like a house on wheels. But is that the only reason you wanted lots of room?
Because I'm living in it. Permanently.
You're living in it.
Yeah.
How long have you been living in it, Carol?
Since I got it a year ago, October. So, yeah.
Okay. So, you have no fixed address. You're travelling and you're just virtually going where your heart and the wind takes you.
Yes.
Wow. This is amazing because I speak with ladies who travel alone. But they're travelling in cars and caravans or motorhomes. I've never seen a lady, because when you pulled in, I thought, wow, a fifth wheeler. And then I saw you hop out of the cab and I'm thinking, okay, she's just driven it in. Hubby's going to get out in a moment. But you're on your own.
I'm on my own, yeah.
And you're living on the road.
Living on the road, yeah.
That's amazing. Why are you doing that? Is it by choice or?
Yeah. I did have a house and I sold that last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're just going to go wherever wherever the mood takes you. So you're currently in Tasmania and you've had it for just over a year, about 16, 18 months. You're still in Tasmania. Have you taken it across to the mainland or no?
It went across and was shipped up to me in Port Macquarie. Okay. And then I drove it back from Port Macquarie through the middle, through to Canberra, down to Melbourne and then across, and been in Tassie since June last year.
So how'd you go putting it on the Spirit?
Beautiful.
You had no problem?
No, and in fact they actually said, oh, you've surprised us how well you drive it.
So you didn't sort of see the walls starting to close in on you as you go down into the wherever they made you park and you think, oh my gosh, it's getting to, the walls are getting close, everything's closing in on me, no?
No, I was first on for that part.
Okay.
I was in with the freight.
Okay.
The freight trucks.
Yep. Wow. I'm amazed. So when you bought it, because you said you bought it to me before we started this conversation, you said you bought it sight unseen.
I did.
So you had some photographs of,
yes,
obviously, and you said your son had a look at it, and he said, yeah, Mum, this is a good unit. It's worth buying. When it arrived in Port Macquarie, which is where you used to live.
In the caravan park, in my caravan.
Okay. So you lived in a caravan, in the caravan park. And then this thing showed up. Where did it show up in Port Macquarie? Was it delivered to the caravan park?
Yep, and he reversed it in for me and then went.
And then did you look at it and go, oh, my God, what have I done?
I did.
Okay, so initial shock, how did you feel when you saw this thing getting backed in? Did you think, whoa, this is too big, why did I do this?
No, I actually paid a truck driving school to come to the park, and he took me around and around in the park, and we reversed all around.
So you had lessons.
I had a lesson.
You had some lessons to drive it and to reverse it and so on and so forth. Well, that was a smart thing to do.
Yes.
Okay. So since you've had some lessons, you've obviously driven it, like you said, you've taken it back from Port Macquarie and you drove it through Canberra. And Canberra's a nightmare. I'm shaking my head, listeners, in disbelief. I hate going through Canberra. So you didn't have any issues in traffic?
No.
Cars on either side of you, not thinking, oh.
No.
You just use those side mirrors.
Yep. And I have the...
A reversing camera?
And there's a camera on the back of the truck as well.
On the back of the truck. So the camera on the back of the truck, is that for you to be able to reverse it on to hitch it up? So how do you go hitching it up?
Easy.
No problem.
When that's fine. I can do that now. I know where it has to be and
So something about the way they've got your reversing camera set up, so you know when you go back so far, oh, that's as far as I need to go back.
And I know on the levels
where
it has to sit for me to be able to get it on.
Get it on.
Yeah.
And then just push the arm through and lock the pin in and away you go. I'm absolutely jaw smacked. I mean, when I saw you coming in, there were a lot of fellas out here. Do you ever feel like I've got an audience? They're all watching me. I'm a lone female traveller driving this 14-metre rig. Do you ever feel a bit nervous about parking it? Because everybody wants to come out and look. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're driving a car in a caravan or if you're like fifth wheel, whatever, motorhome. Everybody seems to want to look and see how good you are. Do you ever feel nervous about that? Like
sometimes
you're going to muck it up?
Yeah, and today I felt a bit overwhelmed. That's why got some help,
But that's okay. But normally you would park it yourself?
Yeah, normally.
And no issues?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever had a situation where you thought, oh, I can't get in there? Why are they putting me in such a tight little spot?
No, because I always tell them I'm a big, big rig and I need, to be able to drive through. Drive-through ones are the best.
Ideally, a drive-through is what you want.
Yeah.
So you've never actually... Obviously, you're smart enough to ring up in advance and say, look, I'm 14 metres long, I'm travelling by myself, can you give me a drive-through? That's ideal. But have you ever had one where it's like, well, there it is, back it in, see you later? Or
No.
They're so always, they always accommodate you.
Or somebody around will.
Or somebody will help you with it.
Yeah. Even here today, the fella at the office said, if you can't find someone, come back and I'll lock up and come and help you.
Oh, wow, fabulous. Mm. But you don't often need that.
No.
How do you go driving it on the road? Like when you're out on the highway, we've established that you have no problem in traffic. What about when you're out there on the highway and big trucks come thundering past you and things of that nature? No?
That's fine. And sometimes let them know that they can overtake. And
So you've got a UHF in the truck? No?
No, I couldn't cope with one of them.
Oh, no? Okay. All right. So you just
That's another thing to handle.
Another. So you don't have a UHF. So how do you let them know? What do? Give them a blinker sign or something?
Okay. The illegal blinkers.
I was going to say, you're not supposed to do that, Carol.
I know.
But you only do that with trucks or with cars or with anybody?
Anybody.
Just to stop them from being stuck behind.
Yeah.
So what sort of speeds
I used to pull over.
Yep.
But then I'm going into the gutters and stuff and I'm thinking, well, why should I?
Yeah.
I'm entitled to be on the road, so they can just wait.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're out in the open road, like what sort of speeds do you average?
80 to 90. Yeah.
Okay. Now, being such a large rig, how do you go... Because you're in Tasmania.
Yeah.
Tasmania is very steep,
yep.
Very narrow on the roads. What sort of speeds are we averaging going up hills?
Not very fast. Today was around 40.
40 going up the hills.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's understandable. It's a big rig. The roads are narrow. They're windy. So do you think... If you could get an automatic, you'd swap tomorrow? Or?
No, probably because I know they burn out.
Yeah.
That would burn out.
Pulling out because there's a lot of weight there.
Yeah.
And I mean, the manual is definitely the way to go if you can cope with it. So what about hill starts and stuff? Have you ever – because I remember a couple of years ago when we came to Tassie, we were in our caravan and they made me go up the ramp. So I was stopping every couple of metres.
Any issues with Hill Stars? You roll back or you're just using your handbrake?
When I first got it, I left Port Macquarie and I did the wrong turn.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up on this really steep hill and it stalled.
Okay.
The truck doesn't like it going down into second if you're still going up a hill.
Yep.
So, and it kept stalling. Okay. And people were queuing up behind me. Yeah, but I managed to get it to
go. You managed
again.
To get it to go. That was the main thing.
Yeah.
You managed to get it to go. Look, where are you likely to be going? Like, you're living on the road. You're in Tasmania at the moment. And have you got any plans?
Yep.
Where are you heading?
I'm heading back to Port Macquarie.
Okay.
Yep.
So when are you due to join the boat, the Spirit?
A week tomorrow.
A week. So what is that? That's
Monday the 27th.
Of February. Yep. Monday the 27th of February, you're heading back. Are you doing the night sail or the day sail?
Day sail.
Day sail.
Not done one of those before.
Okay. Yep. So how do you go driving in the night time? Obviously, you like to be off the road.
Oh, yeah. I don't. Yeah. You don't I like drive just the truck, but not the.
Not the vehicle, not the not the trailer. So with a night sail, I suppose you're going to be still, it's still going to be daylight over here.
Yeah.
Okay, so you haven't done any driving in the dark with the trailer on?
I won't, no.
You just don't want to do that?
No.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, I like to get off the road as often as I can too. I don't like to travel at night time. So what about where you stay? Do you normally stay in caravan parks? Do you do any free camping?
Yeah, I do free camping, but it depends on what the area's like.
Okay.
Yeah, if I feel safer in a caravan park or...
Yep.
Yeah.
So travelling alone, have you done any free camping with this? Because it's it's a big rig, and I mean, you don't think, oh, what about if somebody tries to break into me truck or me caravan? Or, I guess you just common sense. You just make sure that if there's people there, you'll stay. If not, move on.
Yeah.
So the majority of your stays would be in caravan parks,
I
suppose. So that makes that makes good sense as well. So you've never had any issues?
No.
Never broken down? Never needed to change a wheel or anything? Or
not with this one, no. With the caravan I did, but yeah, I've got roadside assist anyway, so.
Okay. So you have no issues hooking it up. You got roadside assist. You obviously wouldn't be too concerned if you needed to change a tyre on the fifth wheeler. You wouldn't be able to do that?
I could not even lift it.
No.
No. So, no, it'd be roadside assist.
Be roadside. There you go, ladies. Just make sure you get your roadside assist if you ever decide to buy yourself a fifth wheeler.
Yeah.
And you're just going to keep going.
Until I can't.
Until you can't.
And then I'll come back to Tassie and go to my son's block.
Okay. Yep. So how long do you sort of envisage living on the road? I'm not going to ask you your age. That's rude. That's none of my business. How long do you think you're going to be doing this for? 5 years, 10 years more?
Yeah, probably another five.
Another 5 years?
Yeah.
And then you'll just bring it back to Tassie
and
set it up as a home and live in it, I guess? Because it's big enough.
Yeah.
Let's face it, you're one person. And a fifth wheeler, it's got everything in it.
Yep.
You don't need... Yep. Anything.
Because it has a slide out. If it didn't have a slide out, then I wouldn't. Yep. Yeah, it wouldn't be
as big. As spacious.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have a look. We're going to have a look in this fifth wheeler later, listeners. I'm also going to get a photograph of Carol standing in front of this monstrous great rig. And it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, my dear.
Thank you.
You're the first lone female traveller driving a fifth wheeler. So when I saw you pull in, I thought, I have to talk to this lady. And would you recommend it for other ladies?
Yeah, if they're confident.
So you're pretty confident?
Yeah.
You'd have no fears, no second thoughts. No. Best thing you ever did, getting out of the caravan and into a fifth wheeler.
Yes. And they're a lot easier to hook up and unhook than trying to, get the caravan.
Jockey wheel and all that kind of. How long did you drive, how long did you tow a caravan for before you decided to get the fifth wheeler?
I had left Tassie the first time in September 18.
Yep.
And I'd never pulled a caravan in my life. And I left with the Bailey's caravan, the lightweight one.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. And then I got the Jayco over in WA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you've done quite a bit of travelling by yourself with caravans.
Yeah.
And now you're hitting the road with a house on wheels.
Yep.
Fabulous. Fantastic. Well, I take my hat off to you.
Thank you.
I really take my hat off to you. I've never seen a female doing this, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. I think if you can do that, good on you, and keep doing it for as long as you can.
I can. Yep.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for chatting with us, Carol. I'm going to play your song now to wind this up. Do you have a favourite Australian artist, singer, band?
Yeah, Tina Arena.
Okay, Tina. Lovely little Tina. I love Tina myself. What about a favourite Tina song?
My husband makes movies.
Your husband makes movies? Yeah. Your husband should be here.
Oh, I haven't got one. I've been there, done that twice, no more.
No more. Okay, I was about to say, if there's any fellas out there who want to join a Carol on the road, but you're going to stay single.
Yeah, no, I've got the certificates. No, don't need any more.
Don't need any more husbands. And you've got a little travelling companion, a bird. Yes. Which you told me you got today.
Yes, I did.
So you've got a little travelling companion. So I guess, and it's the type of bird that does learn how to speak. So I guess if the next time we see you on the road, if this bird is swearing all over the place,
it won't be from me because I don't really swear.
Well, no, you've had some issues. All right, Carol. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
All right, thanks.
All right, listeners, we're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after Tina Arena's My Husband Makes Movies.
My husband makes movies. To make them, he lives a kind of dream in which his actions aren't always what they seem. He may be on to some unique romantic theme. Some men run banks, some rule the world, some earn their living baking bread. My husband, he goes a little crazy making movies instead. My husband spins fantasies. He lives them, then gives them to you all. Like Michelangelo, he paints his private dome that can't distinguish what's his work and what's his home. Some men punch clocks, some men sell stocks, some leap where others fear to tread. My husband, as author and director, makes up stories in his head. Guido Contini, Luisa Contini, number one genius and number one fan. Guido Contini, Luisa Contini, passionate woman in love with this man. Long ago, many years ago, once we two were. Guido Contini, Luisa, his lover, with dreams and a life of her own. Then they had no ends of world to discover, singing together all night on the phone. Long ago, someone else ago. Me so. and he'll be the last to know it. My husband makes movies to make them. He makes himself obsessed. He goes for weeks on end without a bit of rest. No other way can he achieve his level best. Some men read books, some shiny shoes, some retire early, some stay up to dream and muse. My husband only rarely comes to bed. My husband makes movies instead. My husband makes movies.
Oh, there you go, listeners. My husband makes movies. I'm going to do a double shot of Tina Arena for Carol. She was such a lovely person, and I know she's going to love this one. Show me heaven.
As you, though I'm better.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.